Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to Swinging from the Hip. Hi, I'm Paul and I'll be your host this evening. And yes, covering for Ashwin yet again as he's been doing some hard manual labor. Having to renovate a house. So hopefully we will have him back next week to have someone actually knows what he's talking about rather than me, who just blathers on really and makes things up. But don't worry, I've got someone who does know what he's talking about, and that's Arun. How are you doing, sir?
Good evening, Paul. How are you going?
Not too bad. And so what have we got going on at the moment? We've obviously got the second test happening down in Christchurch, clearly, they've had better weather than I've had because they've actually had some play, which is good, over the last 2 days. Unlike what happened in the old Super Smash, we've also got a test going on in South Africa, but that's not going to last very long, looking at the scores so far.
You don't know, Paul. Come on. Cricket's a funny game.
It is, but look, with the days of Atherton and Jack Russell batting for like 2 days and scoring five runs is long, long gone, I believe. And there's also been a warm-up game in the T20 with the Pakistan Shaheens taking on New Zealand A as well, has happened. So a whole bunch of stuff going on, Arun.
Should we start off with wrapping up the first test between Pakistan and the Black Caps?
You go for it, because that seems like a lifetime ago, and I've forgotten now what. Obviously, I know who won, but that's about all I can remember from the game. Oh, look, it was down to like what was it, 6 overs left or something?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to remember. I think it was even less than 6, wasn't it? Maybe it might have been down to about 3 or 4 overs left for the day. Mm. So, hey, but who knew what, you know, look, what can you say? Here we were, you know, in the last couple of chats we've had, and we said we want a closer, tighter test match, more competition. And there we are on the final day, and we're into the second session, well into the second session after lunch and that, and we're going, oh, no, this is going to end up in a draw. Oh, how exciting is that going to be? I think in the morning session we took one. We had them 2 down overnight. Or was it 3? I couldn't remember. And then we took only one wicket in the morning session. It was like, yeah. And they had a really good partnership going. And it looked like they were going to be able to bat out the day.
Well, not just bad at the day. I mean, when those 2 are in and going strong, some people are even talking about Pakistan going for the chase and going for the win, which I thought was a little bit optimistic. But yeah. I mean, hey, there was a little bit of talk of that at one point.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then all of a sudden things changed, didn't they? Quite dramatically. A couple of quick wickets. And all of a sudden we're all sitting on the edge of our seat going back to, dear, what was a test match? I was trying to remember. Well, we've had a few of these, haven't we? I think in both against England, if I remember rightly, the one at which I was at Eden Park, and we Black Caps needing one wicket and couldn't do that. And then England toured again, and I think it was a pretty similar situation, but this time they were able to pick up those wickets. I think it was a day-night test match, if I remember correctly, at Eden Park. Yeah, it might have been there, and that was a close game. So, hey, but this, again, we came down to a great finish, and like you say, Black Caps finally got through and picked up those wickets, and it was our boy, who I had some doubts about, and I still do, Mitch Santner coming through and picking up that final wicket with a pretty good catch in the end to get rid of the Pakistani tail ender. So, yeah, and it wasn't a simple sort of end either to that test match, because we had the tower, was it Shaheen Afridi getting hit on the head by a bouncer. Can't remember who bowled it. Of course it would be our old mate, Mr. Neil Wagner. And obviously, I mean, mentioning his name, there he was bowling became the hero of the test match, didn't he, with his two broken toes and still being able to bowl and, you know, got a couple of pain-killing injections in his toes, I guess. And apparently each time he went for an injection, each time, as soon as the doctor got near him with the needle, all you heard was screaming. And that was before the needle went in.
Jeez.
But yeah, hey, a great finish, great test match, and you know that's what we love seeing on it. Closely fought and then right down to the wire.
Absolutely. And as you say, fantastic test match, enthralling, really good comeback by Pakistan on that final day. They could so easily have folded. And it could have been all over. From memory, all five bowlers took two wickets each in that final innings. So yes, it was spread out amongst all the bowlers there, and they had to work for it, which is which I guess is good to see as well. You got to feel a little bit for Santner. Goes and gets the winning wicket, and then gets dropped for the next game.
Yeah, well, look, I did, obviously, you know, we had our two experts there last week, and I did, you know, bring up the Santner situation with them, and then, you know, I said I had my doubts about him as a spinner, and I think, you know, on that pitch, he should have been a lot more effective than he was, you know, so it just shows that, yeah, we've seemed to have worked out our batting and our bowling, fast bowling or medium pace bowling players, but spinner, we just still, to me, we lack that sort of class, world class spinner there, that just to round off that team and make it, you know, more competitive and more combative. If a test match goes into its final day, and the way that pitch was breaking up, and you know, I'm sure if you had any other half decent spinner on it, that ball would have been turning more than it was with Santner there. Hey, but he did the job, and that's what counted on the night. And as I say, we've got a W in the column, and we move on to the next test, which is underway down in Hagley Park. Here in Christchurch, and as you say, lucky to be underway at all, considering some of the weather we seem to be having around the country.
Lucky it's in the South Island, not the North Island, because yes, up here in North Island yesterday, one of the Super Smash women's game got rained off after less than two overs, and the men played out a five over affair.
I don't want, I've got that in my notes to bring up. And I mean, I'm happy to talk about it now if you want to.
But... No, I was going to continue on with the test match. But and so what we saw was Matt Henry and Daryl Mitchell were the two guys who came in for Wagner and Sattner. Happy with those replacements?
Yeah, look, I guess Matt Henry's the next off the cab, really, isn't he? He was in that, always within the 12 or 13 players mixed there. And, you know, it was only injury that put him out of that equation. And, you know, we had Kyle Jamieson came in. And, isn't that guy made an impression on the test arena? You know, what can you say?
We'll talk about him in a second. Going into this game with five seam bowlers, one of them at least an all rounder. Were you concerned by that? Do you think that they should have a spinner, just have something different?
Well, yeah. Look, as I say, to me, I always to round off the balance of a team, I'd prefer a spinner in there. Mix. I wasn't able to see the toss. I mean, I didn't know too much about the pitch conditions and that. But obviously, South Island, you're going to get a green pitch. It ball's going to move around a bit. We know that when Colin de Graham is playing, he's had a bit of success down there in Christchurch with his little dibbly-dobbly medium paces and that, and the way he gets to cut off the pitch. And I guess with Daryl Mitchell in there, that's what they were looking at, you know, with him doing. So, hey, you know, we'll have a little chat about that a bit later and how he was used.
Two overs in that first innings. The point?
Exactly. Yeah, what's the point? And, I mean, I did read an article beforehand where it was even the coach, Gary Stead, said he's probably more of a batting all-rounder as opposed to de Graham, who they consider as a bowling all-rounder. So, you know, obviously. So, yeah, which, again, like you say, makes interesting reading. And on top of the fact they only got two overs, well, you know, yeah, not scratching my head, pulling my hair out. Well, I don't have any of that anyway. But yeah, very interesting. As I say, Matt Henry was always going to come in as that fourth medium pacer, so as to say, to take over Wagner's place. Not in the same ilk as class as Wagner. But, you know, I think they were going through some of the stats and I haven't got those in front of me, but he's played about a similar number of games that Kyle Jamieson has now, and he's picked up about a similar amount of wickets. So, hey, again, I guess the stats maybe speak for themselves. I thought he would have played more games quite easily than Jamieson.
I've got him down here as 12 test matches. So Matt Henry, 12 test matches for with 30 wickets. 1-5-4. No, 2-4-4s. No 5-4s. So, yeah, not really there.
Nah. You know, so, yeah, I mean, if we swing back to, you know, Kyle Jamieson, obviously he's a different style of bowler. 2 metres tall, you can do a bit more with your bounce and that, especially on the New Zealand pitches. With the angle and that, he comes down and he's just proven himself, you know. What's it, his third 5-wicket bag, his fourth 5-wicket bag in that first innings there. And he's had a 4-wicket bag as well in between, plus the runs he scored.
I think Matt Henry is in the same class or a stats wise as Kyle Jamieson. Kyle Jamieson, 5 wickets, having an absolute cracking start to his Test career.
Yeah,
the as 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 you say, this is his second five-wicket haul in five games. Has taken 25 wickets so far, an average of 14.44. That's a that's a decent anything below 20 is pretty good. And yes, yeah, so 14.44 is a fantastic average at the moment. How good is he really? Because one of the things that's being leveled at him at the moment is he's only bowled in New Zealand. Now, look, that's not his fault. He's only started this season, so he's not had the opportunity to play overseas. But how good is he really?
Well, we're going to find out when we're allowed to tour overseas, and obviously he'll be a pick, and we'll find out. But, I mean, with his height, and, you know, I mean, if you go to Aussie, if you got the bounce, you know, you look at the bounce and the pitches they get over there, he's going to be effective, isn't he? He may need to just put on a, to me, yeah, just if he can get into that 140 area with his bowling and with his height and bounce he gets and the movement, he's going to be a highly effective bowler. In English conditions, which is similar to New Zealand, again, he's going to be, you know, he is going to be effective to me over there. Obviously, on the subcontinent, it's always always a lot harder for the fast bowlers, and it doesn't matter who you are. You're going to have to work hard for your wickets over it in those conditions. You know, when he goes to maybe, like if you get, you know, you go to South Africa, again, you know, you've got fast, bouncy wickets, he's going to, you know, I think he'll be a handful. West Indies, well, their pitches are sort of changed around a bit from the old days, you know, where they had their fast bowling quartet, so they had nice fast wickets, and which bounced and that, so they tend to be a bit more spinner friendly these days, or not have as much bounce, but they're still, you know, you've still got pitches over there that he's going to be effective on. So as I say, if he can put another maybe 5 or 6 Ks on his bowling radar, and you know, he is, in terms of test cricket, he's young, you know, he's green at this stage, he's still learning. But as the commentators on TV have said, you know, when you got Trent Bolt, Tim Southee, Neil Wagner around you, you're learning a lot, and you're going to be learning fast. You know, and we can see that from the when he made his debut against India last season to how he's progressed this season already.
Hey, look, there's I mean, a couple of things for him. At the moment, he's unknown as far as the opposition is concerned. So there's an element of that they've not there's not much game tape to do an analysis on. So there will be, as they say in rugby terms, second season syndrome, where people have a better idea of what he does, and that's it's going to be interesting. That it's going to be interesting seeing him overseas, not only different decks, but also different balls as well, right? And how good is he with those ones? I don't know how much overseas cricket he's played, whether he's gone over and played some championship cricket, or whether he's played some club cricket in the UK, for example. It doesn't look like he's. I can't see that he's playing overseas. So it's going to be a different ball, different decks. It's going to be interesting to see how he goes. But at the moment, and also with more game tape for people to actually analyze his what he does, he's going to need to he's going to find it. It will get tougher for him, but great start, and it's going to be good for his confidence.
Absolutely, yeah.
And look, well, what we're talking about here, we need to mention is. Azhar Ali, that 93 off 172 balls really anchored things for Pakistan and saved them. I mean, they were 83 for four at one stage, and it was all looking pretty bad. But when he was joined by Mohammad Rizwan, who put on 61 runs, and then Fahim Ashraf with 48, and Zafir Gohar with 34. That really managed to sort of turn things round, and they went from four for 83 to 8 for 282. So those four batsmen really kind of saved things for Pakistan. Hat tip to Azhar Ali, really, really solid innings from him.
Yeah, look, I mean, I thought the Pakistan first innings with Azhar Ali and Rizwan and the other two sort of lower order batsmen. They put together some really good effective partnerships in that innings. And at stages, it looked like New Zealand black cap bowlers, you know, were just going through the motions. Weren't going to be penetrative, as to say. But you know, when you guy like Colin Jamieson sending down just seemingly unplayable balls, I mean, one of the wickets he got just it was like if you were the batsman, you just go, mate, yeah, well bowled. You know, and you just walk off and go, yeah, there's not much I could have done, you know, and that's just one of those balls that I probably won't, hopefully I won't get in a while again. But, yeah, I thought the Pakistan batting, you know, they were patient, not too patient. Like the first test, I think they dug themselves into a bit of a hole with their over rate in that, I think Taz was saying. They came out with some intent and purpose, and, you know, the score, the run rate was, you know, above three most of the day, in effect. And they 297, when you get sent into bat, isn't, you know, I thought was par. Looking at the way the pitch was playing, you know, they could have been bowled out for far less. If a few things had gone right for the Black Caps, and that, but the 297 looked good to me, and also knowing that their bowling attack was pretty good, you know, in that first innings, especially with Shaheen Afridi there. You know, he's young, but he's world class, going to be world class, if not already. So, yeah, I thought it was going to be tricky for the Black Caps. And, you know, we saw that when we came out to bat. We lost our openers pretty quickly. Was it Tom Latham to an amazing catch? He edged it through. It's going towards first slip. He sort of decided to play juggle ball with it, and it was heading towards the ground. And that first slip, was it Sahail Harris? I don't know if it was just instant reactions. Put his hand down and took the ball at ankle height. You know, wow, it was just really amazing sort of reactions from him. And that, so it was a good catch, and that was late.
And the openers got through the first sort of 19 overs without, yep. But then we lost two wickets in two overs as both openers fell quickly after each other, which I think was a bit of the problem there. Ross, yep. Taylor didn't stick around for very long, and suddenly it's 3 for 71. And you got to say, Pakistan's got to feel pretty happy that they've made the breakthrough, and that they're potentially going to, yeah, as you say, two at that stage, 290 odd was looking like a decent score.
Yeah, absolutely, it was looking a decent score. You know, when you're 3 for 70, got the team 3 for 73, and you got number five in there called Henry Nichols. So you know, obviously you got the Rock at the other end and Kane Williamson. It's like, hopefully he gets bored and gets himself out. But with Nichols, you know, you got an opening at one end, so you got a chance. You just needed to get rid of Nichols, and then you'd start to make good inroads into that batting order. But unfortunately,
Nichols, I mean, before this test, had only scored 67 runs in the first two innings. So two innings for 67 runs, well, averaged just over 30. Nothing too spectacular. You're thinking, yeah, you're right in there.
Yeah.
But he pulled it out of the bag. And through the day, defeated at the close.
Yeah, look, you know, I was sitting there watching Nichols batting and that with the maestro. And, you know, I'm thinking back to the West Indies, 174 he got there. And I'm looking, how many chances are they going to give this guy, you know? And has Henry Nichols gone out and bought a lotto ticket recently? Because, geez, I don't think I've seen a guy this season, you know, in one season get dropped so many times or given so many chances. If I was him, yeah, I would have been, if I was Henry Nichols, I would have been down to the lotto shop last week or the week before and buying that $25 million jackpot, because he would have been odds on to win it, surely. Hey, but, well, you know, again, that credit to him, he's batted through the day, like you're saying. He's ended up about 89 or 88 not out.
89 not out at the close of play. Kane Williamson, 112 not out. Now, okay. One of the points that's been made is that basically this side is pretty much entirely on Kane Williamson's shoulders. You look at the batting, only two batsmen have made it over 100 runs, right? And Nichols has only done it because of, as you say, he got dropped several times today. He's scored 156. Williamson so far 262 in the series so far. No one else has scored over 100 runs. You're like, geez, come on. This is he really is carrying this team at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, look, I don't know. You know, you say carrying the team, but he's just on a class of his own, isn't it? His 24th test century again. And then you look at the, you know, as I just before we came on air, I was looking at most test hundreds, you know, and trying to see where he's ranked in there. And, you know, obviously there's two nemesis or two guys of similar ilk, Steve Smith and Virat Kohli. They're, you know, they are ahead of him in the number of centuries scored, but I think Smith, they're only a couple ahead of him. So not that far. He's obviously, Kane's got a long, are we okay there, Paul?
You froze there for a second, but you're back, which is good. But we then look at the Pakistan side, and they've had four batsmen have scored more than 100 runs so far in these two tests. So, okay, it drops off massively after those four. The next guy's got 50. Rizwan, Ashraf, Ali and Alam have all scored over 100 runs. Now, none of them have scored over 200 so far, but in their three innings, but they're getting more. They've got several guys there who are pitching in. It just seems that with this New Zealand side is that on the batting side, at least, some of the other guys need to give him a bit more support, really, to maybe score some real big scores and really put teams away.
I mean, one of the guys who hasn't scored many, except I think just one innings, has been Ross Taylor. Obviously, he's the other guy who's up there with Kane. And, yeah, he just hasn't seemed to have fired off this season at all at the moment, which is, you know, I don't know. It's a bit weird for Ross because, you know that there's usually a 100 in him along the way somewhere. And I think this is the last test of this summer, isn't it? So, obviously, if there's a second innings for us or not, we'll just have to wait and see. Goes the other guy who usually does figure amongst the runs and scores is Tom Latham. And, he hasn't put anything of substance together in that. And the other one, obviously, BJ Watling, who's usually a pretty consistent scorer as well. So, yeah, a few issues there. But as you say, Nichols seems to scored a few in that. And he's been in some good partnerships with Kane this season. And look, as long as Kane, you know, you got guys supporting Kane and building partnerships with him, that's all you can ask. You look at, I was lucky enough to see a little bit of him this afternoon before he got to his 100. And at one stage, when I was looking at him and Nichols, for the amount, they faced about the equal amount of balls, just about, and their scores weren't that too far apart. But I think the commentators said, Kane's second 50 basically came off 35 balls. which is 2020 like. So, and he just made it look ridiculously, he's just all the time in the world with his shots, whether they're off the back foot, the front foot, so some straight drives, just glorious. shots. You know, you just to a connoisseur of test match cricket to me and watching batting of that ilk, it's just, you know, you're just dribbling at the mouse watching that.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, Nicholls has faced more balls than Williamson today, but has scored about 20-odd runs less. So, but as you say, the important thing is someone sticks around with him. They managed to hit some Shaun Mazood out of the attack, which is pretty good. And he only managed, so the fifth bowler comes on, puts on two overs, gets smacked around for 17 runs, and that's it. You can't bowl him again. So then you're scratching around for your sixth, seventh bowlers. And obviously that's then to give your frontline bowlers a bit of a rest, and clearly they're not going to be as penetrative or as dangerous. That allows the batsmen to have a bit of a rest mentally against those guys. Just applying that pressure becomes much harder. So yeah, taking it to take trying to be able to knock it hit one of the bowlers out of the attack is a massive win for them as well.
So I think we ended up with about 287 or 289 at the end of the day. So we're about still
at 286 at the end of the day, 11 runs behind, but more importantly, seven wickets in hand. We're looking, they've got to be looking at going on here and scoring, 400 plus, aren't they? To get a nice 100.
Absolutely. Lead. Maybe 450, 500 even, you know, is what your goal should be, I guess, now, about once, and then hopefully the bowlers can come in and do the job in the second innings. Though it's going to be interesting to see how the wicket is obviously going to be a lot calmer and that, and the new ball is going to be far more important, and making good use of it to grab the early inroads and that. Because Pakistan have, you know, the batsmen have shown, like you've mentioned, that they are good, you know, top quality guys there, and you're going to stick around. They're not going to be easy to remove from the crease. So I think, it's going to be an interesting next 3 days. And I think, but regardless of what happens there, you know, whichever the way the result goes, as far as us needing a win or a draw to win the series 1-0, that will put us in the number one test rankings for test cricket, you know, in the number one position, however long that period, you know, however long we'll be at number one. But for New Zealand cricket to even be spoken of or talking about New Zealand cricket being in the number one ranked test team in the world, this, you know, tell you it's, to a diehard New Zealand cricket fan who's watched cricket from years back when we were the whipping boys, to come to this is just amazing, you know. And I've always maintained watching our guys that, to me, it was a mental thing. Some of the players that we have had have been world class, and, you know, they are able to compete against these other nations. To me, it always got down to a mental barrier. And unfortunately, to me, we still have that one team that is a mental barrier, I suspect, to us, and that's Australia. I think other teams we have conquered, but, hey, it's in rugby terms, and it's other countries coming up against the All Blacks. Yeah, just breaking down that mental aura thing. You beat them a couple of times and you get the belief, and then, you know, you can see that, hey, they're not an unbeatable team.
So that's what's been going on the test side of things. On the T20 side of things, we had three warm-ups. The first one in Auckland, the New Zealand A1 chasing down a target of 154 set by Pakistan. They won the second one in Hamilton, chasing down a target this time of 164. They did that for the loss of just one wicket, this is 22nd of December. That can't be right. Then there was another one where New Zealand set a total of 173, so the biggest total so far But Pakistan managed to chase that down with four wickets remaining in the last over. So 2-1 in the warm-ups for the T20. So that's...
strange, isn't it? Because, I mean, really, the T20 series we had at the beginning of the tour, before the...
Oh, hang on. That's I'm talking about the wrong one. Sorry, those are the... I'll talk about the, those are the those are the international ones. Where were the Pakistan A have played against as well. Sorry, they folks.
Pakistan A was playing. They played Northern Districts, Wellington, and I'm not sure. I think they might be. Might have played against Canterbury.
I can't find the.
It's just a bit weird in the way they've done that. Because they're playing T20s while the Test matches have gone up, and we had the series against Pakistan at the beginning. But I think as mentioned by the boys last week, it's just about maybe. Giving a chance to get other younger guys over and giving them that sort of, because there's no A scheduled A tours, since this was a chance to bring out an extended squad because of COVID and that, because I think the ICC has said we'll give you some extra money to certain countries and that, so they've fitted in these games. All I can say is if they wanted. From what I saw, they lost against the Northern Districts and the Firebirds. I can't remember what happened against Canterbury, but hey,
they beat Canterbury comfortably, which is why I was just which is why I was I can't find the scorecard now.
Yeah, I was going to say if they wanted a nice easy win, they should have played the Aces.
it would have got rained off.
Well, but, if they play the Aces, you get a 5-over game, and you can't. They still. Would have beaten them quite easily, but
anyway, let's just quickly pop over to the Sri Lanka tour of South Africa. If you remember, in the first game, the first test, South Africa won by an innings and 45 runs by when they scored 621 in their innings, bowled out. Sri Lanka scored 396 in their first innings, 180 in their second. An innings and 45 run win for Sri Lanka for South Africa in that first test, and the second test. Well, at the end of day one, it's looking like this is not going to go the distance. Sri Lanka bowled out in their first innings for 157. Naughtji took six wickets for 56 to lead the bowling. Mulder clipped him. With three. Pereira top scored with 60. No one else got over 30 there. So clearly in trouble. In response, South Africa reached 184 at the close of play on the day one for a loss of one wicket. Markram went for five, but Elgar's there unbeaten on 92. And Razi Evanders Dusen is there on 40, not out as well. So looking like a long way here for if Sri Lanka are looking at even drawing this game, never mind thinking about winning it.
Yeah, I think Sri Lanka also they suffered a few injuries on that during that first game and that. Yeah. I sort of saw little bits of it, and I basically it was a guy hobbling around in the field, you know. So they must have been really down on numbers or something for him to carry, having to be out there in the field. But I think he was a spinner and he was actually just sort of walking up and bowling and then trying to hobble down the pitch, trying to pick up the ball. So it was quite, I think it's going to be a long, hard slog for Sri Lanka. Looks like in this test match as well.
Six batsmen getting out for single figures, not a good day.
No.
So if you follow the, if you join us for the morning sports briefing at 7 a.m. every morning, we'll be, I'll keep up to speed with how the scores in that Sri Lanka versus Africa game go, progress, and also obviously the test matches and also Super Smash. So you can join me at 7 a.m. every single morning on Facebook, YouTube or Twitter, or you can catch the podcast. Just search for New Zealand Sports Radio on your favorite podcatcher, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all those, Spotify, all those wonderful places you can find us. The other cricket that's been going on is the Super Smash. So we have a quick chat about the Super Smash, or?
Yeah, just before we go there, I'm not sure, did we should sum up the second test between Australia and India. I don't think it finished when we did our last show, didn't we? They were still in the midst of that test match, I think.
This one's fairly easy to sum up. It's basically it's the reverse of the first test.
Yeah, it was very easy. Yeah, just a bit more to it than that, obviously. But yeah, that sums it up.
In the first test, Australia won by 8 wickets when India collapsed for 36.
Yeah,
In the second test, India won by 8 wickets. When so I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's an intriguing test series. Obviously, it's number one against two on the world, and they're battling to the position to play in that test match. Was it the World Cup of Test Matches there at the home of cricket at Lords and that? So it was very interesting game. Obviously, India didn't have Kohli in the team. He'd gone back for the birth of his child. So it was always interesting to see how this team was going to come out and play. And also, after the collapse, you know, in that first test match, how mentally they were going to be. But look, it was, looking at it from outside, right, there was quite a few changes in the team and that. It seemed a lot more like a more balanced team they'd put out. And they seemed very together and cohesive and seemed to be working for each other quite hard. You know, and under the captaincy of Jinkar Rahane, he brought a totally different style of captaining, obviously, to Virat Kohli, who, you know, should we call it passionate at times when on the field on how he talks to players and, you know, reacts to things, whereas Rahane seemed to be a very calming and influencing figure, made the right calls at the right time. They introduced a new fast bowler in Siraj, and, you know, he seemed to be just, you know, our version of Jamieson, just water off the duck's back, you know, didn't look out of place at all. And their batting order looked a lot more solid with the changes they made in that. So,
helped Rahane putting in a captain's knock of 112, and then basically other guys just trying to stay with him for a short while and put on some runs, really, was kind of how it was. I mean, there was only in that 326. There was the century, and then the next one was a 57, was the second highest score. So, it helps when you're captaining to lead by example. And if you get in nicely and do that, that always gives you confidence then to do the right things in the field as well.
Yeah, absolutely true. And as it's a totally different, you know, and obviously they hadn't been too badly scarred by what had happened to them in the previous test, that 36. And, you know, again, obviously it was mentioned in the commentary box, it was just like, you know, this is just so different, you know. They still couldn't believe what had happened in that batting innings, the test match beforehand. But this time looks like the pressure is all on Australia. You got their top batsman, Mr. Steve Smith, who's scored virtually no runs in the two test matches. He's just completely all out of sorts. And then obviously howls of cry coming across from their fans and experts about changing the team, and I think they have made a few changes. They've dropped one of their openers, Joe Burns, who's hasn't scored many runs at all, and David Warner's back, and they've called up their young fella, Will Pulisicovi, back into that mix as well. So it'll be interesting to see whether they do, whether he does make his debut in the next test match.
You talk about Smith. I mean, it's what, four innings, one not out, 10 runs with a high score of 8 in four innings. Ouch.
Yeah. So, you know, that's not the Steve Smith. You know there's going to be a backlash in there somewhere along the line. Indians will be hoping it's not against them and it comes a lot longer, maybe in the next test series. But, you know, that waiting. But it's the bowlers from both teams have been really dominant in this series. And, you know, besides Rahane's 100, I don't think there's 100 scored in the first test match, was there, Paul? I don't. Obviously not by the Indians, but.
Let me just check on that. I mean, the other point really to talk about in this series is also where is the fourth test going to be played? So the third test is looking like it's going to be played in Sydney. There had been talk about it happening in Melbourne, staying in Melbourne for the MCG because of the COVID outbreak. Now, no, it looks like they are going to score to play that one in Sydney. Now, you're quite right. There are no centuries being scored by any of the Australian batsmen in this series so far. And on the Indian, so that's the wrong one. Sorry, that's the T20 ones. They bring up the Border Gavaskar Trophy ones. We've just had that. One 100 in the first few tests. So the third test is going to be in Sydney at the SCG. Now, the fourth test is supposed to be up in Queensland, up in Brisbane. So the Queensland government has said, look, if you want to come up here and play a test match, then you've basically got to isolate while you're here because of new COVID restrictions. India are turning around going, no, we're not going to spend our entire time inside a hotel room. We don't want to do that. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, whether they'll play that fourth test in Sydney or whether it will happen up in Brisbane. Also, a number of Indian players are apparently have broken curfew and or broken the bubble, sorry, went for dinner or something. And it's all gone a bit quiet as to what the investigation is around that. So we'll have to wait and see how that's whether any of those players will get banned or punished anyway. Simon says he's heard they've been given an exemption. If so, it's happened in the last day. Obviously these things do change quickly. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the rest of this test, with the rest of this test series, not only on the pitch, but also off the pitch as they battle various COVID lockdowns to try and get this series through.
So let's just sit back and see what happens. I think the third test in Sydney starts on the 7th this month, I think, is it?
That sounds right.
So, yeah. Yeah, so that'll be an interesting game. Sydney always favours spinners, so it'll be interesting to see what selections the two teams come up with.
Yeah, so 7th of Jan is the third test, and the fourth test is the 15th of Jan up there.
Yeah. Right, yeah. No, all right, well, yeah. Shall we kick on to our local Super Smash?
So the Super Smash competition on the women's side of things, the Auckland Hearts top the table at the moment, having 1-2, lost one, having that one game abandoned that we talked about yesterday. The Blaze and the Northern Spirits both have 2 wins and 1 loss sit in second equal, or both on 8 points. And the Canterbury Magicians, who were mentioned last week as being side to look out for. They've had one, only had two games, one win and one abandoned. So they've got a lot of games to catch up on. So we'll see how that that all pans out. So, yeah, currently the Auckland Hearts leading that one. On the men's side of things, the Wellington Firebirds are pretty dominant here. Three wins from three games. Clear at the top of the table. Canterbury Kings, to be honest, two wins from their two games as well. With 8 points. Are they a realistic challenger to Wellington? Or how much have you seen of these games?
I've seen little bits and bobs of it, sort of followed it on the internet, and that through Tribe Sports. which is good. But Wellington look like they're doing really well, and a couple of guys standing out. Obviously you've got Devin Conway in that team, opening the batting, but you got a couple of youngsters in there, and one of them's young. I think we spoke about him last week, Finn Allen, and this Rachin Ravindra, two young blokes, I think basically early 20s, 21, 20s. And the last game I was following that Firebirds were playing, I think it was against Northern Knights or was it Central? I can't remember, but Wellington needed to score 148. From the 20 overs, they lost Devin Conway pretty early. And these two young blokes came in and put on a partnership of 120-odd and took Wellington through, which is, great to see for the future of New Zealand cricket, two young fellas like that playing the way they did in that. I think we mentioned last week, one of them, to me, should be playing for the Aces, but hey, who knows how that province and their selection policies and future player development works. But Canterbury, I was able to watch the five over slog against the Aces yesterday, and they're two openers. I think Auckland put up about 51 runs from their five overs, 10 and over. They lost about six wickets or five wickets in getting to that score. And it was only helped by Mark Chapman, who Canterbury generously dropped when he was only on a five or something, allowing them for him to set up a score for Canterbury to chase. They got off to it. They had a couple of slow overs, but then their two openers just climbed into it. And one guy, on one of the openers, Courtney Bowles, he just smoked the bowling attack, Auckland bowling attack all over the place. He just seemed to have no clue how to bowl. That was, what can you say? There's a far superior team playing to the team that is the opposition. We've now played four games, which is the most of any of the teams in the Super Snatch competition, and are at the bottom of the table with four played, four losses. And their net run rate is the worst of all the teams as well. So I think they can write themselves off.
I think we can write them off any further. Moment, the Northern Knights, who have played three games, had three losses, are actually playing currently. So as we're speaking, so the Central Stags put up a total of 117. Nobody really got going. I mean, a couple of 23s in there, but that was it. So 117 for nine wickets off their 20 overs, which you've got to say, is a total that that the Northern Knights would think they could chase down. Currently in the second over, they are 14 for no loss. We'll have to wait and see how that pans out. But yes, the Northern Knights looking in a decent situation. Well, the bowlers have done their job at least. Whether the batsmen can do their bit, we'll have to wait and see. But it looks like the Northern Knights could get the win. meaning that Auckland will be the only team left that haven't had a win all season. So, yes,
yeah.
Not a good situation to be for Auckland.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I think, as mentioned last week, when we were chatting with Taz and Taryn, yeah, there's a lot of, I think, for the selectors at Auckland and their board to think about the direction they're heading there.
Yep.
You know, when you're debuting, well, I mean, well, you were in the chat there, Paul, you know, it's nice for a guy's 32 to get his debut, but is he really, you know, the future of that team when you compare other provinces are putting in players who are 20, 21 and giving them the opportunity to develop, you know?
Folks, if you want to hear the nuts and bolts of that discussion, go back and listen to last week's show where Tarun takes us through that. Tarun Nathula, the ex-Black Cap. There's some serious question marks at Auckland currently as to how they go about their selection of the Aces, quite clearly. Talking of Auckland and club cricket, when does that get back into action?
Yeah, so we're kicking off this Wednesday's not tomorrow, Wednesday night. We've got T20. Sorry, I don't even know what day we're on. These holidays just throw me.
Well, at least it's not lockdown throwing you nowadays, but yes, at least it's just holidays.
That's a good one. That's good, isn't it? So this Wednesday, T20, the club competition's back underway. And on Sunday, there's a double header as well. And you've got one day games again on this weekend with clubs as well. So I think if you want this Wednesday, off the top of my head, now I'm just speaking of him, I think if you're in the West Auckland, West Auckland area, you want to maybe get down to Ken Wander Park and see Cumu take on Suburbs. I think it's on Wednesday night. And then on Sunday, there's a double header at Ken Wander Park as well, where I think you've got Cumu, Suburbs, Hibiscus Coast, and Birkenhead teams involved down there. Obviously, around that, the other grounds, there's also, you know, you'll see those. I think if you head down towards Kitae Park and then down east or down south, down to, it's escaping me. Paul, what have we got?
I went to Parnell versus Grafton the other week. I can't make it up this Wednesday, but I might come up on Sunday for a couple of the games and do some post-match interviews with players and stuff. So, folks, do like our Facebook page. That's where we put our post-match and post-game interviews with various people. We get around the club rugby competitions. We've also get around the Mitre 10 Cup, as well as some of the club cricket, some of that we've been around, getting around hockey, and also a beach volleyball. And interesting enough, today I was down at the beach with my girls doing a bit of bodyboarding, who should pole up but three of the top women beach volleyball players, and they pitched their beach volleyball court right next to where we were sat. I said hello to them, hope to get up to Ruakākā Beach Bash on the 23rd, 24th of January to do some interviews and some videos from there as well. So, folks, don't forget to like the Facebook page. Aaron, thank you very much for joining me this evening. Join us next Monday at 8 p.m. for Swinging from the Hip, Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. for the Driving Moore Show, where we'll go through all the hot topics in rugby. We'll be discussing the Lions tour tomorrow night and whether it's going to go ahead or whether they should tour. Should they tour France instead, or should South Africa come and tour the British and Irish Lions the other way around because of all the COVID restrictions? Anyway, those are some of the ideas that we'll be discussing tomorrow night on the Driving Wall Show. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful week. Anything, any last points, Aaron?
Yep, just keep swinging from the hip during the week and we'll catch you next Monday.
Catch you next Monday, everybody.
All right.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.